The Roman Gabriel Show.
But because it went into overtime, all international media, everybody was down, and they couldn't control the pouring onto the field. So I could hardly get to Brady. I had a security rep and an NFL rep. They both got knocked down, and our field producer, I lost them somewhere, even our cameraman. But they had an overhead camera, and I had the headset, and our producer just said, just when you get to him, let me know. We'll shoot, start out with an overhead till we can get a better shot. And at first, Tom, when I first got to him, I said, hey, can you do this? He goes, really? I said, we're going to go live. We're live with Tom Brady on Fox. I mean, it was our only chance that he cooperated.
But you assume closing. I like that.
Yeah, he was very cordial under the circumstances, even though he was emotionally drained and exhausted. But that was one of those special moments.
Welcome to the Roman Gabriel Show. Faith, family, sports. Roman goes up close and personal with high-impact difference makers from the world of sports and entertainment. Get more exclusive content at www.romangabrielshow.com. Now, here's your host, Roman Gabriel.
Welcome to the Roman Gabriel Show. Go to romangabrielshow.com or right here for more high-impact difference makers in sports and entertainment. Coming in with me is Fox Sports host and Emmy Award-winning interviewer Chris Myers, who's been part of several groundbreaking sports programs, ESPN's Up Close, SportsCenter, and now Fox Football. Chris has interviewed some of the greatest athletes and coaches of our generation. He also has a new book out titled That Deserves a Wow, offering readers a front row seat to some of the sport's biggest moments with inspiration through tragedy and triumph. Enjoy my interview with the great Chris Myers. For more sports and entertainment content, go to our official website at RomanGabrielShow.com or right here for the Roman Gabriel Show podcast at American Family Radio at www.afr.net.
The Roman Gabriel Show.
Fentanyl is killing the unsuspected every day. I stand before you today to tell you how my 18-year-old daughter died from fentanyl.
My daughter had knee surgery. She was 18 years old and she loved gymnastics. So she was finally able to get a knee surgery done. And as a result, she was in a lot of pain because of that. Was pressured into peer pressure by the social media, talking to friends saying, I'm in pain. And them suggesting, well, so-and-so, can get you some pills. So she ordered a pill through Snapchat that she thought it was a pain pill. And it was delivered right to the house.
The pill he brought her while I was getting her food was not a painkiller. It was fentanyl.
So it killed her instantly. And I found her. I said goodnight to her that night and found her lifeless body the next morning in bed. She took the pill, and one pill can kill. And the pills don't discriminate. Actually, providing these platforms to these drug dealers to merchandise these drugs, and not so much as fentanyl, disguised as, whether it's Xanax or Adderall. I mean, it comes in everything. I mean, kids are even vaping it these days. Any opportunity I could get to help families and speak and tell my story to prevent other families from having to go through, having to endure this profound pain that my family has gone through, I will take that opportunity. I've been and continue to fight this ever-growing crisis and drug epidemic that has plagued our society.
For more information on fentanyl, please go to soldouttv.com. The top of the homepage, click on fentanyl education. It may save someone you love.
The Roman Gabriel Show.
Welcome to the Roman Gabriel Show, RomanGabrielShow.com, wherever you get your podcast. And with me is an old friend. I've known him for a long time, covering Super Bowls and ESPN Up Close, Fox Sports, Fox Football. He's done just about everything. And the other thing that we're going to talk about with him is his new book, That Deserves a Wow. And I can't wait to read it because he hosted one of the great shows in sports history, Up Close, following Roy Firestone. And you were telling me before the show, Chris, that he made people cry and you made people laugh.
That was kind of the way we did it. But credit Roy with establishing at a time. It was very different where there wasn't any other place athletes could get a good 20 minutes, half hour to express themselves. And Roy had that format on Up Close. At first, it was called Sports Look with ESPN.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and then Up Close. And then when he left it at ESPN, bought the show, I was doing Sports Center, the late Sports Center with Mike Tirico, and took over the show. I filled in for him a few times. He was very helpful. Both grew up in the South Florida area. So Roy kind of helped me out with that. And that, yeah, and then we had a good 4-year run. And the famous interview was the first live interview with O.J. Simpson after both, you know, he was acquitted of the double murder trial, but obviously found liable in the lawsuit, you know, with the family and supposed to pay damages, which he never really did. But and that interview, you know, normally that show wasn't live, but that what he wanted. That was the two conditions to do the interview. If Barbara Walters was going to do it, but she would only tape it. And OJ said no, because you can edit it and change things. I want it live. So he did our show first. He watched and thought I was a fair interviewer with athletes. But obviously, we were supposed to be a half hour. We went on for like 50 minutes, and we didn't really talk sports. Obviously, we had to talk about the trial, which and his situation, which was still to this day fascinating. So, that was one of those moments.
So many people, Chris, like I grew up in Los Angeles, you know, watching him at USC. So many people know him only from that day
right?
What an incredible football player he was.
Yes. I mean, Hall of Fame, Heisman Trophy, and then the personality from television, some movies, you know, the Naked Gun series that they still run, the Hertz commercials. But that whole thing changed. And it was one of those rare moments where you're there to cover sports. And that's kind of what, you know, Roman, what the book is about. I didn't really think about writing something until HarperCollins came to me and said, and you can pre-order it now, you know, Barnes & Noble or Amazon or whatever, it'll be out in November. But they were like, man, you've covered, you know, Brady in that great comeback Super Bowl against Atlanta. You were there to interview him. The Red Sox comeback with the Yankees, and they broke through with for that World Series in 2004, ending their curse. You were there. But then you were also at these other, like the OJ interview, and then you were on the scene at the Earthquake World Series with the A's and Giants in 89. And you were there at the reporting for ESPN at the Olympic bombing in Atlanta. I was taping Up Close then with Charles Barkley and at the Commerce Center. And I mean, there are so many unique situations. It's kind of like if you took movies Almost Famous, you know, the young guy in radio and sport, and then you took Forrest Gump and you put a sports feel to it. That's kind of what.
Well, all those events were the kind of events where you knew exactly where you were when it happened.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, I start out covering sports, and then all of a sudden, boom, something else happens, and so it's bigger than sports. But that's, you know, that's the magic of sports, because it's live, or television, our industry, in terms of live, unpredictable. And you react, you prepare as best you can, and then you do the job that you're reporting to an audience. You're telling people about something, and you're trying to be accurate, and you're trying to be respectful, similar to interviews, that type of thing over the course of time. So I hope people find it interesting. I think there's an inspirational part to the story, too, for people who are into sports and sports broadcasting. And then there's fun stories, friendships with people like Charles Barkley. Bill Murray wrote the foreword, gotten to know him through the years. He's a big sports fan. And going back through it, I was like, when they brought it up to me, hey, you've been at a lot of these places. Even Dale Earnhardt, our NASCAR race on Fox, we covered the Daytona 500, and he dies at the Great American Race, the most famous driver at the time and the most famous race. And so these are things they stick with you. And through my own life, some experiences of triumph and tragedy that I share from kind of the background through my eyes. So, yeah, I hope people have an opportunity. They have a chance to read it.
Chris Myers with us. That Deserves a While is the book. Pre-order it now. And do you do the autograph thing, Chris, for people that want autographs? Do you do
I don't. Yeah, absolutely. If they want it, unless it's on a check somewhere that I can't cover. But I don't know. We haven't set up all that, but there will be some promotional things in November at different bookstores and that type of thing. But it's just out there. Do people even read so many books anymore? I know I always read, when I got into the business and radio as a teenager, read about people in television, sports, and news, and media, and coaches and players, so that I could get a sense of what they were thinking, and later help me. Even in the O.J. Simpson interview, and I mentioned this in the book, Bill Murray, of all people, said, you know, you got to be careful with a guy like him. He's going to spin his story. There's a book called uh, how to how to talk to your children so they'll listen, and how to listen so your children will talk to you. And it was a paperback that I had to dig and find. And it was very helpful in terms of just trying to stay with somebody who's trying to twist and turn things. Looking back on it, some fascinating moments.
Chris Myers with us on the Roman Gabriel Show, RomanGabrielShow.com. And you were, you know, we met years ago at the Super Bowl. I think my first Super Bowl was Dallas, Pittsburgh, and Phoenix. Long time ago.
Wow. Yeah.
I started in radio the same way you did. And I agree with you. Radio really cuts your chops, especially when you're doing a 3-hour show where you're doing interviews for all 3 hours and you're taking anybody's call on anything.
Right.
But you remember back in the day at the Super Bowl, my first time, I was covering it for a little radio station back in North Carolina and doing reports during the day. And you remember what we used back then? We had the little click recorders.
Right.
Where you just basically held them up. And
right.
And we didn't even have, you know, ISDN. The station, you know, was so small. I needed to find a telephone because the first report was like 7:30 at night. So you remember Cellini and Hickman with CNN.
Sports
Illustrated.
Vince Cellini and Fred Hickman.
I went upstairs and those guys were finishing up their show. And I said, Fred, I got to do a live 3-minute thing back to a radio. So can I use your phone? So they let me use their telephone, and I would do the Dan Marino said this and put it.
And put the clip, and who knows what the how great the quality, but that's what's changed so much. But that was the last time the Cowboys were at a Super Bowl, right?
You talked about what I think. There's a lot of great Super Bowl games, but the Atlanta New England game there had never been an overtime, as you remember, the first time in 99 when the Rams played New England, everybody thought there'd be overtime. And then Brady does the last second drive to kick the field goal and win. But what were your thoughts watching that game? Because that was the first time I can remember watching Tom Brady where I thought when the pick happened and they were down 28-3 that it might be over.
Yeah, I really felt I didn't sense it from them on the sideline. But I felt they couldn't come back. I mean, they weren't panicked. In fact, that's what stunned me a little bit, working that sideline and being on the field. You know, I get to talk to the coach at halftime, and Belichick didn't really have any answers. You know, you get a few moments off camera that you report, and he kind of just gave a couple of stares about certain things. So that wasn't uncommon for him. But in that situation, he didn't have a worried look on his face. And I had interviewed him before in Super Bowls at halftime where he was up or it was close or tied. So that was like, why aren't they more upset? There was a few moments with Brady on the sideline, but there was this kind of sense of, well, we know what we have to do, and if we just do it, and then Atlanta kind of played into their hands a little bit. I don't want to take anything away from the Patriot effort. There were a few moments, and I don't want people blaming Kyle Shanahan and Matt Ryan and the defense for that. But yeah, you started to feel, you know, okay, well they might be able to cut quick. And as it got closer, that's when I felt, you talk about experience in a game, that's where I felt like, and I would never use the word choke with an athlete or a team, but I just felt like, okay, the Patriots, this is comfortable to them. Even though they're down, they feel like they know what they have to do to win, to close this out. Whereas the Falcons, you know, with Dan Quinn and Shanahan calling the offense, they were kind of not grasping, but they weren't sure. And you could almost sense that part of it. But I think it all started with the Patriots not, of course, you never mail it in or quit, but just not saying, hey, no matter what, we can't come back. You know, they just kept chipping away, a field goal here, let's get some yardage there, let's try to do this. And it really was. And then Brady was exhausted afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the one.
That's what I remember is in his post-game press conference, he got hammered in the first half, got hit a ton, really. It was a physical football game, and they were in his face. But as the game went on, the Patriots had to throw the ball so much that the pass rush started to go away. And once he started getting in a rhythm, I was the guy sitting next to me. He said, what do you think? You know, when the game was tied, I said, if Slater calls, he always calls head because of his father, Jackie Slater, used to tell him, you got to call heads. And you remember he won the toss in the Kansas City Chiefs game later after that. And then he won the toss at this game. And I told the guy, I said, if the Patriots win the toss, this thing is all over.
Well, I thought once they were caught, and again, at that point, it was the Patriots. It was almost like the air was out of the room for the Falcons. They had given it all they had, and they were watching it slip away, and there was nothing, you know, nothing they could do about it at that moment. But that was one of the special, just seeing Brady. Remember, Brady had the Deflategate. His mother had an illness. I mean, there was a lot of other things that – and when I got up, I had to fight through it. And you know, from being down there from the media, the Super Bowl crowd, usually – the network doing the game, you know, you have some access, so they let you get out there before they put up the stage for the trophy. But, you know, Fox wants the field reporter to get there for that quick emotion after. But because it went into overtime, all international media, everybody was down, and they couldn't control the pouring onto the field. So I could hardly get to Brady. I had a security rep and an NFL rep. They both got knocked down, and our field producer, I lost them somewhere, even our cameraman. But they had an overhead camera, and I had the headset, and our producer just said, just when you get to him, let me know. We'll shoot. We'll start out with an overhead till we can get a better shot. And at first, Tom, when I first got to him, I said, hey, we're, you know, can you do this? He goes, really? I said, we're going to go live. We're live with Tom Brady on Fox. I mean, it was our only chance that he cooperated.
But you assume close him. I like that.
Yeah, he was very cordial under the circumstances, even though he was emotionally drained and exhausted. But that was one of those special, special moments.
Chris, I always thought I became a big Patriots fan because I just loved the way Brady attacked the game and prepared for the game. And I liked the fact that he was always the same guy when he won a Super Bowl and when he lost a Super Bowl. People never noticed that, but he would answer all the questions. He would come out. He would give the other team credit. But the times that you covered, I like to ask guys that spent time with Tom Brady, what is the special thing about Tom Brady that you saw in the times around him that made him what he is?
Well, I did a few of the Super Bowls, and I did the one they lost. So when they beat the Eagles earlier, and that was the one in Jacksonville with Donovan McNabb, and then also the one that the Giants, where they were, the Patriots had the perfect season, and they lost that game. And remember, you know, there was a chance with Randy Moss late that they were going to win. But my point is, in those, we get our production meetings. You get to watch. You get access to the practice during the week that the other broadcasters don't, when you're the network, Troy Aikman, Joe Buck doing the game. And then you get some sit down time with no cameras rolling, and you talk to a guy. And that's when I really, you know, was wowed by Brady, not only what he did on the field, but how he spoke, how he kind of programmed himself. And you could tell he always carried that thing with him. He's going to over, if there is an overachieving, but he wasn't going to leave anything to chance. You know, he was going to push. And if somebody else on the team needed to be pushed or prepared, he was going to do that. And his calm in the moment also stood out to me even. And he, you know, he would in meetings get a little fired up about things. He looked for things to find that where somebody might, even though they didn't say it publicly, disrespect the team or him, so that they could use that, even if he had to kind of program it in his mind. So another guy's, you know, more physical ability than Tom Brady. But I think when you're really preparing and no defenses, you know, I saw Peyton Manning have some of that kind of same thing as well, although I went around him in as many Super Bowls. But then you got to deliver, and you got to hope your team around you, and they responded to him. So I thought, you know, hey, Montana, Elway, the Brady still had a way to go to get to be the greatest. But once he chalked up those last few Super Bowls and then went to Tampa, and I was around him there and got that Super Bowl, beating, you know, the Chiefs and Mahomes. That was a great defensive effort from the Bucs. But to me, then I said, you know what, it's not just the Super Bowls. He's the greatest quarterback of all time.
Everybody, this is Roman Gabriel, host of the Roman Gabriel Show. You know, our mission is much larger than providing you an entertaining podcast. Our country faces an ongoing crisis of underage youth battling alcohol and drug addiction and a rising suicide rate. This problem impacts all of us and our families. Our nonprofit, the Sold Out Youth Foundation, has been my passion since 2003, impacting hundreds of thousands of middle and high school students, challenging them to an alcohol and drug-free life, while providing a life-changing interactive online education platform, teaching students valuable life skills and success principles, equipping them to pursue their passion and dreams. I need your help. Our program is successful because of people just like you who financially support our movement. Please give safely and easily today by going to our website at soldouttv.com that's soldouttv.com, and click on the red donate button. Or right now on your cell phone, text soldout20 to 484848. That's soldout20 to 484848. All donations are 100% tax deductible, and believe me, any amount will help. Your generous gift can help one more child stay on the right path to health, wellness, and success. Thank you, and be sold out.
Welcome back to the Roman Gabriel Show. Faith, family, sports. Roman goes up close and personal with high-impact difference makers from the world of sports and entertainment. Get more exclusive content at RomanGabrielShow.com. Now, here's your host, Roman Gabriel.
Chris Myers with us on the Roman Gabriel Show, RomanGabrielShow.com. Don't forget to pick up his book, That Deserves a Wow, and all stories from Chris Myers and his background at all the different venues he's been at. We've talked about a couple of those, but, you know, I remember specifically, tell me about the Oakland A's World Series and the earthquake.
Another amazing first year at ESPN as a reporter, the West Coast reporter, and Chris Berman and Bob Lee are with us in the stands at Candlestick Park, A's Giants World Series. The two big sports center anchors that that set the tone for the history of that network. And the guest analyst, believe it or not, was in between managing jobs, was Joe Torre, and he was with us too. And we were up in the stands at the Candlestick Park, and we hear this noise. And I just moved to Southern California, so I knew a little bit, but experienced some minor earthquakes. But obviously, Bob and Chris hadn't really. And it sounded like a plane had kind of hit the stadium. We saw the ground kind of rumble, and it was like, man. And so, you know, what Bob was like, whoa, what's going on? And Chris Berman was like, yeah, it seems like this is a carnival ride. And then we realized how serious it was, and we had to rush down. And our actual satellite trucks at the time, you know, ESPN, ABC, Al Michaels, they were able to use that for them to kind of stay on the air to report. But we right away went into, I was the reporter, and Bob Lee would anchor from the parking lot, really, to give information that we knew in and around the stadium. So we were trying to give, okay, well, obviously the game's not going to be played, da 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 da. But then as we got more information with help from the home office about what had happened in and around the city, and it just the actual size and hit of the earthquake and how damaging it was. And then for, you know, days after, having to stay in a hotel without power, and Commissioner Faye Vincent talking to him about would they even continue, should they continue, you know, is the World Series that important given what's going on? And they obviously resolved that. But it was, I guess, you know, my experience having been in a little bit of a smaller earthquake helped handle the, you know, in terms of not panicking. But again, here I am, a sports story with, you know, some people, and it becomes a bigger story than sports. And so the World Series takes a back seat, but you report on the information and the stories that you have to the people that are watching. And the fact that we were able to kind of go live and then do daily reports, I think helped, again, ESPN, its growth through the 90s. I called it the golden years. And that's the other fortunate thing. I began in radio, but, you know, some local TV in Miami and New Orleans, but then hit through the 90s, ESPN, when I think were their most important years of growth, when there really wasn't any competition. And then 2000, going to Fox Sports after they get the NFL, they add NASCAR, baseball, soccer, and over the last 20 years, the growth of Fox Sports and all the other networks that are, whether NFL Network, Tennis Channel, whatever, now every sport pretty much has its, you know, its own channel, its own network.
You were right about the no competition, because I was doing a regional radio show at that time, a call-in, and I can remember that the ESPN guys would call us to say, hey, we want the guys to come on to promote, you know, NFL football and promote college football and promote Sports Center, because ESPN didn't have a radio network at the time.
That's right.
So what was crazy was, is we would get all you guys, all the top guys. Yep. I mean, Patrick, Berman would come on my show for an hour and tell stories. I mean, it was so interesting back then, because you didn't have the instant everything. You know, the radio deal was still a big deal. Radio was just growing at that time. And then you guys got the radio network that came in a little bit later on. But it was Wild West during the 90s. I mean,
yes.
I can remember sending out, stuff to other networks where you remember you couldn't send anything by computer because you had like 1 megabyte of space.
Right.
So
right.
You had to FedEx everything, right?
Yes.
It was
tapes,
crazy.
Reels. Yeah, you know, the first ESPN went on the air with like their weekend. Actually, I'm trying to think. Bruce Murray might have been working there. Is now on Sirius. And Mike Tirico and I actually did a couple of segments. You know, they asked us while we're doing SportsCenter, come over and do some Fox, some ESPN radio as they began. It's funny because Fox radio, sports radio later followed in that same vein. But yeah, that was where, you know, ESPN, if you wanted highlights of anything, especially the college crowd, you know, everybody went to ESPN. It went from nobody knowing that they existed, or at least not many, or people making fun of it. I remember I forget a manager when I said, I'm with ESPN in the early. He was like, what's that, a Spanish channel? And I was like, no, and then later. And then later went to every athlete, everybody who loves sports knew what ESPN was, and then ESPN2 and the continued growth of that. But things that they changed a little when Disney bought them. That there was a different dynamic in terms of how it was run, the atmosphere a little bit, although they grew, you know, they had many more resources and opportunities. But that's big business. And at the time, other channels were growing as well, other sports channels, and that, you know, now we have streaming.
Does it disappoint you? I know what you're talking about ABC Sports when they took over ESPN. Does it disappoint you, not just about ESPN, but about sports media in general, how political it's become?
Yeah, well, I think, look, I think we all should be political in our responsibility to pay attention and vote. I mean, that's important for our society.
I was thinking more of just all the politics that has come into.
Yes, sport. What I don't like is, that interfering with when you're trying to cover a sporting event or a particular athlete. And look,
athletes.
Or watch it. Nobody wants it shoved in their face. People are allowed to have their opinions and express them properly. You work for a company, usually they give you guidelines on that type of thing. Athletes certainly have the freedom to do that. Nobody needs it to overpower. I think people, and that's what's always been great about sports, is, you know, nothing brings people together like a big sporting event, whether it's a Super Bowl or an Olympics, and those are, that's good, healthy competition. So, yeah, I do worry a little bit, and sometimes it's kind of there's an undertone to it, and it's secretly done, or it's a backdoor kind of political thing, and I there's a place for that, but it's certainly not in the coverage of sports, at least not from where I stand.
Chris Myers with us on the Roman Gabriel Show, RomanGabrielShow.com. And remember to get his book, That Deserves a Wow. And you know, real quick answers here. Favorite interview on Up Close?
Quite a few. Barkley, Charles Barkley comes to mind. So does Bill Murray, who, you know, those, and they are mentioned in the book. The most famous one is the OJ interview that you can still watch on YouTube. And I still have people today who watch it. And then come back and respond, because you put it in context back in 1990, you know, the end of the 90s when that happened. And then, of course, all that happened to him later. But those are the ones that just come to mind right away. And there were many. I mean, there were many cool people, from John Wooden to Bob Knight to whatever. You can go through history, Montana, Elway. But yeah, those two jump out at me.
Tell me about did you have any input into who you had on the show?
Yeah, quite a bit. I could request, you know, and sometimes the network would say, hey, you know, we want to have this person on. Sometimes, you know, an agent who would help put a superstar on would say, hey, can you help this other guy? He's, you know, starting to play, you know, whatever, you know, give him an appearance. And so some of that went on. But I will say that there were no pre-existing, you know, in terms of we didn't give questions before, that type of thing. And I tried to do it live to tape my flow of doing it. And I tried to keep it entertaining. And I wanted people, you know, to feel comfortable. You invite them on a show, they're in your house, living room. So you can still ask tough questions. I remember Warren Moon had something we were going to have on about football, but then there's a domestic violence issue. So I said, hey, if you're going to come on, I still have to ask you about that. He said, I understand that, you can ask. But, you know, I don't want to be the whole show. I'm like, that's fair enough. So, I think it was important to, it was hard to be topical sometimes because we didn't go every day. We would tape two or three through the course of the week. And now sports has become so live and happening and instant, which is why I like the live portion of it. But yeah, it was nice to have, it was a really neat opportunity to have some influence on who we wanted to have on the show.
So did you interview Wayne Gretzky?
Yes, I have. Yep, way back in the early portion of it. Yep.
Tell me about Wayne. What was
special? For the great one, I didn't cover a lot of hockey, but he was very kind of simple and unassuming in terms of, you know, and he talked with great detail, and I think his skill was all in what he did on, you know, on the ice. Obviously, he had to have a mind for his success. It's kind of a blur because that was one of the very early interviews that I did, I think, when he came out to Los Angeles when I was out here. But yeah, I mean, one of my first interviews was Ali. I had a crazy experience with Mike Tyson that's in the book, where he almost beat me up, so to speak, for something that I said about the ear biting incident that got him enraged at his home in Las Vegas. So yeah, I mean, when I think back, I mean, even the great Johnny Unitas.
Let's stop you on that one. My dad's two idols were Johnny Unitas and Arnold Palmer. I got a chance to meet Johnny's son about 8 years ago at the Super Bowl. He came up introducing. He had a crew cut, believe it or not. So about Johnny Unitas.
That's neat. That's it. Well, no, just both of those, Arnold Palmer, Johnny, and your dad too, by the way. That was one of mine. I mentioned in the book, I'm trying to remember that was one of the first, talk about athletes. The Rams caught my attention as a young kid watching football, you know, before my family was into sports and the helmets. And so Roman Gabriel was the quarterback of the Rams. And that's, you know, that's what it was, kind of drew me into sports as a kid before I was really involved in it. So, but yeah, and I never really had to, you know, up close a chance to interview him, but he did come on a radio show that I did later, which I enjoyed him doing. But yeah, Johnny Unitas was very almost Sinatra like in that raw kind of personality, the tough, the crew cut, like you said, his son, that's what struck me at. You know, I'm trying to think back to, because I also interviewed Art Donovan. You remember that? He was a character.
He was Miller Lite guy.
Yes, who was hysterical too. But yeah, Unitas, for at the stage where I was, obviously he, you know, I was a young kid. He was retired and talking. We mostly talked about quarterbacks of that era, you know, from his time. And Arnold Palmer was a perfect gentleman when I interviewed him, as was Jack Nicklaus, who, you know, could be tough and firm about things and opinionated, but highly principled too. That's the other thing that stood out about the people I just named, even Don Shula, who I interviewed, Tom Landry. After he had been let go by the Cowboys, very, very classy, even when they were upset about things, Shula upset about Belichick, you know, and the spying and all that type of thing, that how could a coach do that kind of thing?
You mentioned earlier John Wooden. That's a guy I wish I never got to interview. Tell me about John Wooden.
Yeah, there were quite a few interesting things. I did a TV interview, a couple of them with him, and I did the last radio interview with him. And he said, I'm not feeling well. And he was 99 years old. And I said, well, you don't have to do it. We'll do it another time. He goes, no, we better do it. And then a couple of weeks later, he had passed away. But the one thing I did ask him, along with all about coaching and some of his quotes that you know, what he would teach people about life and about basketball. But I remember asking him if at 99, if he feared death, and I'm paraphrasing some of this, but he said, no, I don't fear death, because whatever's next, I think it'll be better than this. And this hasn't been all that bad. And then he paused. He said, but I'm not in a hurry to get there, which is kind of, you know, his type of, but what a gentleman. Wise. He was like a Mother Teresa, of coaches or people in sports. That was truly a pleasure, around him. I always felt good after an interview with him walking away. I just felt better about the world, no matter what was happening in my life or the world.
Well, this is a broadcaster question coming to another broadcaster, and I've had people ask me this before. When you do as many interviews as you do throughout your life, who's the guy that you really wanted on, that you felt really excited about, but it was a terrible interview, or he wasn't a good interview, or might not have been good that day?
Wow. I gotta say, there really haven't been. I mean, we had with Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan, they were tough to get in our situation in terms of when we could tape it or on the show. So they come to mind as just, I wish the interviews had been better, or we had a better situation for them. But again, some interviews, you know, I'm a post game reporter in a World Series or a Super Bowl. Others, you know, you have this format on up close where you have time to sit, or with John Wooden on the Chris Myers interview thing, which I had going at Fox, where it was the same kind of half hour format. I got to honestly say, there were some people I wanted to have on that I couldn't quite get in time. But there was nobody that I think came on that. There was one that I talk about this in the book, and I don't know if it exactly relates to your question, but it was Mark Gastineau from, he had retired, you know, from the Jets. He was trying to get into boxing or wrestling, and he came on the show and was just totally off the wall, and we had to run it. It was live to tape, but I mean, and I'll shorten the story, but he had, you know, he's telling me before we go on that he had his teeth knocked out and this company made these false teeth and he wanted to say that on the air. And I said, well, we really don't do that. So he took them out and he dropped them in my coffee cup before he went on, and he said, I said, well, you shouldn't, you know, we're going to be on in a minute. And then he put him back in. And then he said, Bridget Nielsen, he was dating, and he had a tattoo of her on his rear end. And he wanted to show the audience. And I mean, I don't know if he was medicated or what. Then he spilled into this whole story about how when he was a kid, his dad, he left his bike in the driveway and his dad backed over the bike, but blamed him. And it changed his life. I felt like I was in a therapy session. So I felt like it's a very unusual interview. I'll just call it that. And then later, you know, he wouldn't leave his hotel room. We were worried about him, you know, because we'd fly out guests sometimes and put him up. And we weren't sure what was going on there. So I don't want to speculate about that. But that was one of those really off the wall interviews that stuck with me through the years.
Chris Myers with us on the Roman Gabriel Show. And you watched him on Up Close and now getting ready for another NFL season as well. Tell me about the season coming up, Chris. Changes in rules. I was at SoFi for the Dallas Rams game and saw that weird kickoff thing. I still haven't got used to it yet. So what's your impression of the new kickoff rules?
Yeah, it's a little bit like some of the other leagues that they've tried. You know, it's funny. They went from, okay, the kickoff, which I agree was getting boring. You kick it through the end zone. It's out to the, you know, 20, 25, whatever. However, now it's the 30. But it went from like, should we eliminate it, to now let's be creative. So I'll give the league credit for trying to make it safer, so you don't have that running start, which is why the players can't go till it hits the landing zone or is caught. And they're trying to create another offensive play, you know, or at least a play that's worth staying in, you know, watching, so you don't flip away like, oh, there's another kickoff. I can run away for a moment. So that's one thing I do like. It's not going to happen this year, the idea of some digital enhancement to help with spotting.
I was just going to ask you that on the change.
Yeah, I think we need that. I think it's time. You can't, you know, we've had too many guessing spots and big moments that affect games and teams. It's not fair to them. We have the technology to make this a more exact science. And I think that's
still going to be a chain backup, because I would think that the chain guys would be really upset.
Yeah, well, they it isn't going to happen this year. They have to install a certain number. It's either 15 or 18 cameras exactly in the same spot at every stadium or every field. So they were going to try it in the preseason. They didn't get enough. So it's not going to happen this year. But I do think it'll improve things. And they were talking about still bringing the chain gang out with that, and just kind of helping the referees put the ball down and still double checking. So it's kind of a virtual measurement, if you want to call it that. The NFL is the greatest thing going. It's what I grew up around first in sports. Just amazing that you could almost have a game on every night and still watch. And the league is in different parts of the world now. One day I think we'll have a Super Bowl and overseas. That wouldn't be my choice, but
we kick it off on NBC with the Chiefs and the Ravens.
Yeah.
A lot of people are talking about, you know, it's never, the three-peat's not been done. What do you think about the Chiefs' opportunity to do this year?
Yeah, have been around those Patriot teams, the Bills, even as a young kid out of high school covering the Steelers, and they're, you know, and they won back-to-back two different times. So, but yeah, to do three in a row, I thought last year was, you know, the year they were going to stumble.
Right.
And then they worked their way through it, and they earned every bit of it. It's like, you know, nobody laid down for him. Mahomes is special, but I think the way Reed and Steve Spagnuolo works with that defense, I just don't, you know, there's a lot of good quarterbacks, especially in the AFC, that they have to get through, whether it's Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert with now Harbaugh coaching him finally. You know, a quality head coach there for the Chargers with that particular quarterback, Josh Allen. I mean, the poor guy can't break through for Buffalo to beat Kansas City and Mahomes. So I would say it's tough to pick against him, but I would just say the odds Again, Mahomes has to stay healthy, but he's been able to do it, and they have the right kind of team around him. I'm fascinated by the NFC side, though, because I think that's wide open. I know the Niners there. I think the Lions, if I had to pick to start the year, I think Goff and Campbell and that team, they probably have.
The North is going to be strong.
What's that?
NFC North is going to be strong.
Yeah. The Packers are coming on with their quarterback. Minnesota, it's unfortunate the injury that they had at that position, and the Bears now think they have a quarterback at Chicago. But I would say the Lions would be my, at least going in, maybe even over the 49ers from the NFC. The AFC, who steps up with Kansas City? Can Cincinnati get back and do something special there? They have a good coaching staff. They have Burrow. He has to stay healthy. I don't know if the Dolphins or the Bills, either one of them, are ready.
Houston, so who's your surprise team like the Lions were last year? Who do you think?
Yeah, well, and I would say, by the way, and I did some of their games with C.J. Stroud. Last year, Houston was the surprise team to go from last and make the playoffs and have the kind of success they had with the kind of quarterback I know Carolina had hoped that Bryce Young would be. I would say let's look at a surprise team. Well, Cincinnati was last in the division, so that wouldn't be a surprise with Burrow. The NFC South gets a bad rap. I think that, you know, the Buccaneers to me have a defense that could go to the Super Bowl. Atlanta, a lot's expected of them. I don't know if that necessarily would be a surprise. There really aren't any teams that, I mean, there's just some teams that aren't as good as the top tier teams that I would say would break through, like Houston. I think the Bears are hoping that they can, you know, with their quarterback like Houston did last year. That's about the best. But that division is so much tougher.
Chris Myers, Chris, what a pleasure to have you on the Roman Gabriel Show. And I'm going to ask you one final question for that generation that we grew up in. Up close was such a game changer for sports. There were very few shows. I mean, people are so used to today talking to athletes and coaches and about everything in their life, but that wasn't true. I can remember the beat writers for the Rams when my dad was playing. The agreement was, you leave my personal life alone and I'll take care of you here in the locker room after games. That was real clear that he just didn't want anybody, you know, he didn't like to talk about his personal life outside of the game. But up close really changed that whole dynamic for a generation. You followed Roy Firestone. First of all, what do you think Roy's people will remember about his contribution to up close? And what do you think you brought to it after coming in? And how exciting was it for you to follow him?
It was a dream of mine, as much as it was to get on to host SportsCenter and to call NFL games, to host up close. It was really one of the most enjoyable things I've done throughout, you know, broadcasting. And Roy Firestone deserves a lot of credit for establishing that kind of show, getting it on the air, and then getting it on, you know, a network like ESPN that was kind of growing. And then the kind of people, contributors he had, and the kind of questions he asked. The thing about Roy and had that format, think about a free-flowing half hour, the research that he did and had, the people was so good, so into people's backgrounds. And he got them to talk about, as you said, yeah, there was a segment of the show about how great an athlete they were. But then the personal stuff, whether it was something growing up in childhood that affected them, a loss in the family, a dispute with a teammate, some things that were uncomfortable. But Roy brought those things out. And I, you know, was honored to, you know, when I filled in for him, and I always respected him and was honored to kind of step in. And that's what I said. When I'm replacing Roy Firestone, I'm just kind of coming in after him.
How old were you when you came in?
How old was I? Let's see. I was probably in my 30s because I went to ESPN late 20s. So maybe mid 30s, 35, somewhere in that range.
So this was a huge break.
Yeah, it was. And I had a decision to make because I was doing SportsCenter. I was a West Coast reporter. I won an Emmy with a story there about an all-star pitcher, and then moved back to Connecticut doing the late Sports Center. Linda Cohn broke her in. Mike Tirico and I were doing the show, and they kind of wanted me to stay there as an anchor. But when this show opened up in 94, 90, whatever it was, the mid-90s, and Roy said, hey, he was leaving, I was like, you know what, I really want to I want to be back in LA. That's the kind of show I want to do. It's still on ESPN. So thankfully, ESPN gave me that opportunity to come back and do that. I could still cover NFL and do some other things. And then obviously after that, it led me to go on to Fox because I wanted to stay in Los Angeles. But it, the point you were making is that at the time, athletes wanted to come on to talk about things, and then because that was their chance to be to represent their thoughts about some personal things, personal life, and they wanted them out there, or to address some things about them that maybe were misconceptions through the course of their playing career. Will Chamberlain was another one that stood out to me when I talked to him about what was in his book about all the women and that type of thing. And and so it was really fun to have people have the time to have conversations like podcasts have now. And thankfully, we have so many more things like this.
My favorite all-time basketball player is Jerry West for the Lakers. Did you have Jerry on the show?
Oh, yeah. On many occasions, spent time with him. And boy, you talk about a type A zero, even after his days as front office coaching. I mean, firm. I mean, almost he was one of the, he didn't make me nervous, but he, I just felt like he was always just ready to, ready to snap. I mean, he was
had a chip on his shoulder. Those Boston Celtic losses all those years.
Yes.
He really felt like the Lakers should have won a lot more championships, and I don't think he ever forgot that.
I mean, the NBA logo, I mean, it's a great argument, too, when I think about all the guys I've interviewed, Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Kobe Bryant, of course, Jordan, Barkley, how do you pick Oscar Robertson I had on? It's just when you look back at how you saw the Ernie Banks. I talked to Ernie Banks, never went to a World Series, but one of the great players. They really, I got to say, most of them really, you could tell how they were raised, just good people, even though they were came from different backgrounds and were raised differently. But they had this desire to have success and to pay the price for success. And we're grateful for people who appreciated their success. And it was a great experience to get to know people, in front of the camera and then beyond that.
Well, Chris, I've enjoyed over the years watching your career growing up in Los Angeles. You've been a staple out there. And of course, we'll let you promote that first Fox football game. Who do we have first?
I have the Saints. Well, it's in New Orleans, which Fox has the Super Bowl in New Orleans at the end of the year, which the Superdome's been remodeled once again. They've had some great games there. But yeah, the Saints against the Carolina Panthers and Bryce Young, who has a new head coach. And then I think I have a Giants Washington game and then a Lions game. So we learned our first few working with Mark Schlereth at Fox.
He's the best.
Some great people from Daryl Johnston and Rondé Barber and in and around Troy Aikman and a lot of different people that, but Schlereth is the latest to a guy from the trenches in the old days and a three-time Super Bowl champ who's great to work with as an analyst.
The book is That Deserves a Wow from Chris Myers. You need to pick it up. When's the first time to be pre-order anywhere now, including Amazon and anywhere you get books?
Yeah, Target. Yeah, Barnes & Noble, and then November 19th, I think, is when it'll be in bookstores on shelves at that time.
So how many cities are you going to be doing?
I don't have all that yet. It'll depend maybe on where my football schedule is. But now, we can do so many things by Zoom, so I can talk to different people or do Fox and Friends or, morning shows or sports shows, the people that are interested in the book. But I do appreciate you mentioning it, too. It's a lot of personal story journey, but sports fans and people who have a dream, and want to pursue a career, I think will find it very, very entertaining.
Well, it's exciting to have you on, and really appreciate you taking the time, Chris, to be on the Roman Gabriel Show. And I am looking forward to the book. I love books like this that shed a light on some of these guys that people don't get a chance to see the inside of. So, you being on up close, you got a chance to do that whenever you have 30 minutes. It's a wonderful opportunity to dig deeper. So, we used to enjoy watching you, and we're going to enjoy when the book comes out. So, Chris, good luck with the NFL season. Look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on. Anytime. You take care.
Thanks so much for listening to The Roman Gabriel Show. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a rating and review on iTunes. And be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. And remember, you can help us at the Sold Out Youth Foundation by donating. Text SOLDOUT20 to 484848. That's SOLDOUT20 to 484848. And help us help your students to stay drug and alcohol free.
The Roman Gabriel Show is produced in partnership with Revoice Media. Executive producers Roman Gabriel and Nick Ruffini. Audio editing by Justin Thomas. And graphic design by Catherine Wade. For more music, entertainment, and sports podcasts, check out RevoiceMedia.com.
Listen to The Roman Gabriel Show, at RomanGabrielShow.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.